WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Jay Michelson. Mr. Michelson is author of the recent book, just out last year, God versus Gay, The Religious Case for Equality. Jay Michelson is speaking at a conference in Chicago this afternoon, and we're waiting to make telephone contact with him. Let me say a few more words about him while we're waiting to actually get him on the line. He'll be coming to Champaign-Urbana, where this program originates, tomorrow. He'll be speaking at the Hillel Foundation on the University of Illinois campus. That's at the corner of 5th and John Street. That's the Cohen Center for Jewish Life, the student center for Jews on campus. And the rabbi there, Rogerio Kuckerman, who is the executive director of Hillel, who was a guest on this program a few weeks back, told me then about Jay Michelson's visit. And so I thought it would be good to have him talking with us just before he came. And so he very graciously agreed to, as soon as he finished his lecture at the conference he's participating in, he would be slipping off to a room that they had arranged for him to have this conversation live on the radio. So we're waiting for that to happen, but he'll be speaking tomorrow at Hillel at 7 p.m., and that is open to everyone. And he'll be talking about his book, God vs. Gay. Jay Michelson was raised as a Orthodox Jew and discovered his own sexual orientation for other males early on in life, and struggled with that mightily in relation to his faith. And so the book that he wrote that came out just last year, published by Beacon Press, is a very personal book. It tells about his own story, his own coming to terms with who he was as a gay man. So we're looking forward to talking with him as we make that connection. Our engineer is working on that. In the meantime, let me share a little bit more information about programs coming up here on Keeping the Faith. Next week, our guest will be Christopher Mitchell. He's the executive director of the Wade Center in Wheaton, Illinois, which has collected material over the last probably 4 decades, I guess, maybe longer, on 7 particular Christian authors. And one of those, I guess the person that it really started with, was C.S. Lewis, the English writer. And Christopher Mitchell will be talking with us live here on Keeping the Faith on February 26th about the C.S. Lewis materials that are there at the Wade Center. And they are open to the public, particularly to scholars, but also to just people who are interested in C.S. Lewis and his writing and his particular history. So that'll be coming up next week here on Keeping the Faith. That's February 26th. And then in March, we'll be having a number of very interesting programs. We'll be talking with Nikki Kyle and Anthony Stouter about the crop walk and raising money for fighting world hunger. That's March 11. Later in March, March 25th, Esther Poitnoy will be our guest talking about safe zones in the African country of Kenya. That's again March 25th here on Keeping the Faith. In April, we have a full schedule already, I think. Jackie Lynn, who's an Episcopal director of the Episcopal Peace Fellowship, will be our guest, and that's the first Sunday in April, April 1st. On April 8th, Josh Slocum, who's the National Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Association, will be our guest, talking about current funeral practices, options people have when there's been a death in the family. He'll be our guest on April 8. April 15, David Sherwood and Reverend Catherine Cusmall will be our guests, talking about Earth Care, a program recognized in the Presbyterian Church and at the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana, dealing with care for the earth from a religious perspective. On April 27, we have a very special program coming up. Roger Ebert, as many of my listeners know, was on this program the very first year Keeping the Faith began, back in 1999, which was also the very first year that Roger Ebert came to Champaign-Urbana to the Virginia Theater to offer what was then called the Overlooked Film Festival. Now it's simply called Ebert Fest. Roger talked with us on the radio before the very first movie was shown about religious themes in contemporary cinema. And we're going to be replaying that that interview on April 27. It had been lost for a number of years, and it was particularly exciting when we found it again because, of course, Roger's been unable to speak because of throat cancer for these last 3 or 4 years. So it'll be good to hear his voice again talking about religious themes in films. Roger's name appeared here at the University of Illinois a lot last week because he is helping to lead the effort to raise money for the Daily Illini, which is provided free for students and others in the community, but like many newspapers, has been struggling in the current economic downturn to find enough advertisers to keep going. So Roger is helping lead a fundraising effort for the Daily Illini. Later in May, Joan Bailey will be one of our guests, May 6th, talking about how teaching adult Sunday school can create something exciting for contemporary adults. And we have an artist coming up on May 13, Steve Gilday from the East Coast, talking about art and values in relation to his work in Japan over the last a decade or two. That'll be artist Steve Gilday on May 13. So let me explain to listeners, we are still waiting to make telephone contact with our guest tonight. This is a live show, as always, here on Keeping the Faith. And our guest tonight is Jay Michelson, that's spelled M-I-C-H-A-E-L-S-O-N, who's author of the recent book by Beacon Press, God versus Gay? The Religious Case for Equality. We're still trying to make contact with him via phone in Chicago. And let me share a little bit of information while we're waiting for our guest. About Friday Forum, the University YMCA has been a longtime sponsor of these Keeping the Faith programs and has provided support over the 13 or so years we've been having this program. And Friday Forum is one of their very long-term series where they bring in lecturers to talk on different topics. And the topic for this semester is particularly interesting, I think, creative approaches to global development. And I heard a very good review of the speaker from last Friday that I announced the Sunday before, Reverend Axel Gehrman of the Unitarian Universalist Church in Urbana-Champaign. He was speaking about wisdom on Wall Street, and I was told that the listeners were just completely focused on what he was saying, and there were many interesting questions that came up afterwards. And in fact, I'm trying to schedule Reverend Gehrman to be on Keeping the Faith and talk about some of those same issues. I think it'll be a fascinating program. But that was last Friday. Those programs are taped, by the Y, and if you happen to miss it, you can contact Casey Allman at the Y at 337-1500 and find a way to get a copy of that program. But the program that's coming up next week looks interesting as well. It will be provided, but the speaker is Matthew Winters. He's professor of political science here at the University of Illinois. And he'll be talking. Now, this topic is a bit longer than Axel Gehrman's Wisdom on Wall Street. Professor Winters' topic is From Structural Adjustment to the Post-Washington Consensus and Beyond, Paradigm Shifts in Development Aid. So Professor of Political Science Matthew Winters will be speaking at the Y February 24th. That's at noon. And people can take their lunches or they can buy a lunch at the Y Eatery, good Thai food. It's often referred to as the Y Thai. And hear the lecture. It's free. You can simply go and listen if you like, and there'll be a time for question and answers afterwards. Let me just check on our progress in getting in contact with our guest, Jay Michelson. I see so far we don't have contact with him. I think what we'll do is play a bit of a former program where we interviewed a singer named Somi. And we'll listen to her talk about her music and maybe hear a cut or two of things that she's recorded while we're waiting to connect with our guest for today, Jay Michelson. Let me make sure that we're ready to do that. Okay, we're going to listen now to a singer named Somi, S-O-M-I. She was a very interesting interview, and we'll hear part of that at this time.
Fire within, I've slipped with my heart and hand wide open. Now the then I couldn't remember till now, but it tastes just like yesterday. Come down and sweep over my bed, sweet scene of the broken hearted. Come down and sweep over my bed, sweet scene of the broken hearted. So I might be still, fast fatigue seems faster. Now's the future couldn't dream of till now, but it tastes just like yesterday. Yeah. sababu nimechoka.
Well, we just heard Prayer to the Saint of the Brokenhearted, written and sung by Somi from her CD, If the Rains Come First. When did that CD come out? Was that 2010?
It was the end of 2009, so just over a year ago. It was in November of 2009.
And so. Your earlier, you've had two CDs earlier. You had one in 2007 called Red Soul in My Eyes, and in the second part of this show we'll hear a little bit from that because I find it wonderful to listen to as well. Let me give the phone number. So if we have listeners who'd like to ask a question about your music, they can give us a call. If people are in the Champaign-Urbana listening area, where WILL originates, of course, at the University of Illinois, you may punch in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. That's in the 217 area code. If it's long distance, you may use a toll-free line to get to our technical engineer here in the station, Kyle Kroa. Punch in 1-800-222-9455. So that's also available if you're listening online. So 1-800-222-9455 if it's a long-distance call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Somi, tell us about your interesting name.
S-O-M-I. Yes. Well, Somi is short for Kabasomi, which is a name from the western part of Uganda, as I mentioned earlier. Even though I grew up in Champaign, Illinois, my family is originally from Uganda and Rwanda. And so my mother is from the western part of Uganda. And Kabasomi in her language means child of reading or child of a scholar. And I was born the year my father was actually completing his postdoctoral work at the University of Illinois. And hence the name. You know, Africans have a tendency to name it, to do circumstantial naming. And so that's sort of what it was. So Somi is just the diminutive. It's just a shorter name, shorter version of Kabasomi. And I find it to be quite a little bit more musical, perhaps. So I decided to just go by Somi.
And since you grew up in Champaign-Urbana, there are folks here locally who knew you in high school and earlier with your family name Laura Kakoma, K-A-K-O-M-A, right?
Yes, of course.
And your late father, you mentioned, was from Rwanda, and I remember when you sang here, not only the concerts you sang at Krannert, which were all sold out, but you very generously sang at the Carl Hospital's Mills Cancer Center Pavilion for patients there and doctors and nurses and other folks in the community who were visiting that day. And you spoke very movingly about some of your music that grew out of feelings you had after your father's very untimely early death. Does your music often grow out of your feelings?
Out of my feelings, definitely in general. But you know, my feelings about a number of things, and you know, I would probably say all the time, you know, music has been sort of a cathartic and it's just something, it's given me something to move through really anything and everything, whether it be moments of pain or joy. I am thankful for the gift of music just to be able to articulate some of those emotions and to be able to talk about things that I don't always maybe have the strength or the words to just, you know, in the normal conversation or in normal sort of personal exchanges to sort of discuss or share. So I'm thankful that I have that as a sort of a medium for both catharsis and celebration.
We're talking with Somi about her music. And another song that I thought we should play, since you referred to the story you wrote about the song about the homeless man, On my iPod, when I downloaded it, it's number 10, Jewel of His Soul. But I notice on the station's download, it looks like number 9, Jewel of His Soul. So we're going to start it, and if it's the wrong one, can you tell me?
Okay, I couldn't hear the last bit of music that was played, so I'm not sure if I can tell.
Ah, so you're not able to hear the music. Okay.
Sorry.
Well, I'm not sure what that problem is. So it was just silence when when the music was playing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
While our engineer is trying to solve that problem, why don't we play one that I know where it is? Let's let's play a part of the title song from If the Rains Come First.
Okay.
And we think we have this one right. So let's give it a try. Well, we've heard a bit of the title song from the most recent CD of Somi, S-O-M-I, If the Rains Come First. Could you hear that at all, Somi?
I couldn't, actually.
You couldn't again. All right. Well, we'll keep trying to solve that problem, but I'm glad you stayed on the line. Thank you.
Okay.
And we have our first caller for this afternoon who'd like to make a comment or ask a question on line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Fine. Could you take the time to talk about some of the difficulties and problems of simply arranging to manage the background, the music, recording, and perhaps the financing of travel time and things of that sort?
Financing them, you said?
Well, that's one of the things. You don't do it without money.
Okay, right.
I think our caller is sort of asking, what's it like to be a professional musician these days? How do you actually get something produced when you're first starting out?
Well, I think there are a lot of different ways. Well, first of all, thank you for your question and thanks for calling. I think there are a lot of different sort of ways. You know, the thing about working as a professional musician or artist is there's no sort of cut and dry A to B, you know, like, oh, I'm going to do this degree and then do this and then, you know, that I'll be able to land a job as a professional, you know, musician or artist and actually have a sustainable career at it. So it is about, you know, keeping the faith. I think that's the name of the show, correct?
Right.
It is also, you know, about always being willing to sort of put yourself in situations that might challenge you in ways that will help you hopefully grow as an artist. I've been fortunate enough to collaborate with a number of different people. I think it's great. It's important to keep open to collaboration because, I've learned so much from just the musicians in my band or some of the other artists who sort of welcomed me into their creative process. I think that's a huge part of it. At least in New York City, it's very much about establishing a sense of community and really immersing yourself in that artistic community, both the artist side and the presenter's side. I think that you have to be malleable in that you should be able to not only do one thing, but do multiple things. And I don't mean multiple things like, and, you know, hold down a waitress job, which I did do many years ago. But like, you know, I also would like to believe that I'm a cultural activist of sorts. I started a nonprofit organization called New Africa Live and supporting other artists with the resources that I've been fortunate enough to be given here in New York. Really, from the beginning, it's about, you know, being clear about what your message is, what your voice is, what you want to share. I think once you're honest with yourself, people feel that. That's the first thing for any kind of sort of creative person. I always believe that it's about just being honest with yourself and not being consumed with what is the next person doing? What is the next artist, you know, the person sitting beside me doing? I think when I first came to New York, I was incredibly overwhelmed with the immense talent that is in this, just in this city. I mean, and that's just in New York, not everywhere else in the world. I was a little bit intimidated by that. But once I was able to kind of remind myself that I actually had been given something, I'd been given the gift of music and the gift of a voice, and once I decided to really honor that and be honest with it to myself, I felt like that's when you ultimately begin to connect with and find your audience who ultimately are loyal to you. And in terms of really getting that music out there, it is about establishing a base, an audience base. And, you know, my main audience is my main supporters, I should say the longest supporters, the longest community of supporters for me as a professional musician are here in New York City because I started here. But now, you know, obviously I've traveled and toured internationally and have been able to find those audiences in a number of other places. But, you know, it's about establishing that and then being, I think it's important to also be a business mind. You know, you have to know how to sort of market yourself. I think that's what is required of an artist today. You have to know how to market yourself in terms of what is your brand. It's so much about branding ourselves now, because even as we try to reject the idea that we're some sort of commodity or some sort of, you know, thing to be exchanged in the commercial market, I think it's important that we remember that art is business and music industry, that's just what it is to survive as an artist, to make a living as an artist. And so in terms of how to finance it, how to get access to that, you know, my journey has been a bit organic in that way. I never sort of shopped, you know, demos around in an aggressive sort of way. I think New York really is a city that celebrates the arts, and it's very much, it's not just about the artists, but it's also about the audiences. They want to be a part of that. They want to be a part of that journey. They want to know, you know, who is doing what. And it's important that as New Yorkers that we're informed about those sort of themselves when the time was right for them to present themselves. And so fortunately, I've had situations where a label has been able to finance and produce an entire album for me, or I've, you know, saved every little dime and produce my my second record. My first and second record I produced totally on my own, but my second record I was able to secure an international licensing and distribution opportunity with a pretty reputable label. And so that those sort of situations present themselves, I believe, when you're doing the work and being honest with yourself and really, you know, being honest with your audience and nurturing that. I hope that answered the question.
Thank you very much. I'm sure it did. And thank the caller for that very good question. We're talking with Somi, S-O-M-I, and she mentioned her second album getting wide distribution. That was through World Village and Harmonia Mundi. And her most recent CD, well, that second one was Red Soil in My Eyes. And her most recent CD, If the Rains Come First, is distributed, let's see, where?
Oblique Sound.
Oblique, that's right.
An independent jazz label out of New York and Paris.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And you mentioned collaborations. Who have you collaborated with?
I've collaborated with my most recent, probably in terms of the last record, the one that most people talk about in the press, at least, is with Hugh Masekela. Not sure if you're familiar with him,
trumpeter,
but he's very,
sure.
You know, sort of legendary African musician and icon in the, definitely in the African jazz, and is just a long time somebody I admired for many years as a young person. And I was fortunate enough to meet him in 2005 at a concert that he did here in New York City at Prospect Park. And I did hand him a CD of songs, and he promised to listen. And a few months later, he gave me sent me an email, which was, you know, amazing for me at the time. But he's just somebody who I think, because he grew up in the spirit of mentoring, he is... he's been that person to me over the last 5 years now. And so he performed on my last record. I've also performed with a lot of, and performed with or collaborated with a lot of different people, like anywhere from Baba Mal, a Senegalese great voice in Senegal, Bobby McFerrin, Cassandra Wilson, John Legend, just a very wide range. I don't know, Nicholas Payton, Mos Def, just a very wide range.
And Paul Simon.
Paul Simon, yes, of course, Paul Simon. So just a really wide range of opportunities have sort of presented themselves, and you only hope that you can be prepared for those opportunities when they do present themselves.
And if there are other musicians of a world-class nature, you may email Somi Still at somi@somimusic.com. Somi, we're about halfway through our program, and let me reintroduce you. Somi is a singer and a songwriter. She calls her music New African Soul or Jazz, World Music. Her most recent CD, If the Rains Come First, before that, Red Soil in My Eyes, before that, Eternal Motive. All are available, various places where you can buy music, and I presume at your own website as well?
I beg your pardon? Yes.
At your own website?
Well, at least links to
links.
Amazon and
sure.
Also other places.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And so, my name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Let me make a couple announcements about upcoming guests. We've been listening to an archive program with the singer-songwriter Somi, S-O-M-I. This is Steve Shoemaker, and I'm back live now because our original plan was today to interview live via phone the author Jay Michelson. He wrote the book published by Beacon Press, God versus Gay, The Religious Case for Equality. And he was scheduled to be talking with us by phone. He's at a conference in Chicago, and apparently there were some difficulties at that end. And if we get him even in the last few minutes, we'll try to talk with him a little bit today. But if not, people in the Champaign-Urbana area can hear him speak live tomorrow at the Hillel Foundation at 7 p.m. The Hillel Foundation is also known as the Cohen Center for Jewish Life on the University of Illinois campus in Champaign-Urbana. It's located in Champaign on the corner of 5th and John Street, right across from Johnstown Center and across from the McKinley Presbyterian Church, I happen to remember. So the author, Jay Michelson, will be speaking on the same topic as his book there at Hillel tomorrow. And again, as I say, we will speak to him if he does, if he is able to make a connection with us. We'll get back to the archive program in just a moment, but let me just remind listeners on this February 19 that coming up next week, our guest on Keeping the Faith will be Christopher Mitchell, the director of the Wade Center. We're going to be talking with him about the Wade Center in Wheaton, Illinois, and particularly about the C.S. Lewis materials that are collected there. The English writer, novelist, and professor of medieval English literature at Oxford and at Cambridge. On March 11, we'll be talking with Nikki Kyle and Anthony Stodder about the crop walk. On March 25th, with Esther Portnoy about safe zones in Kenya. Those are some of the programs coming up here on Keeping the Faith. And let me mention again the Friday Forum coming up at the University of YMCA in Latcher Hall, Fridays at noon. The whole series this semester is on creative approaches to global development. And next week, on February 24, Friday at noon, Professor Matthew Winters from Political Science will be talking about from structural adjustment to the post-Washington consensus and beyond, paradigm shifts in development aid. That's at the Y at the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street, right across from Lincoln Hall that's being repaired these days. And those are free lectures at noon. You can buy lunch at the Thai eatery there, the Y Thai, or take your lunch or simply go and listen to the free lectures. They last about an hour, and then there's a time for question and answer. And it's been a program of the University of Y for over 80 years and continues to bring in wonderful speakers on important topics. Well, let's go back to our archive program with the singer and songwriter, Somi. Well, let's get back to our guest today, Somi, S-O-M-I. And why don't we start off by playing a little bit from your Red Soil in My Eyes 2007 CD. I've been listening to this for some time and really enjoy it personally. Let's start with the first cut. How do you pronounce this? Is it Ingeli?
Ingeli.
And what language is that in?
It's in Swahili.
That's Swahili.
Mm-hmm.
And you grew up, you mentioned your father was from Rwanda, your mother from Uganda, you spent time in Zambia. African languages, in some of your songs I think I hear Xhosa. I can't do that clicking sound, but but you've learned to do that, or did you learn that early?
I don't speak Xhosa, but the clicking that people hear when they ask me, when what that is and if I'm speaking an African language, it's actually vocal percussion.
Ah, okay.
And it's just something that I began to explore, as with my voice and slowly incorporate it into my music.
Well, let's hear from Somi Ingeli. Tchau. Well, we've just heard a portion of the Swahili language on Ingale, sung by Somi from her CD from 2007, Red Soil in My Eyes. Somi, were you able to hear that at all?
I was, thank you.
Ah, good. We've solved that problem. Wonderful. And let's talk a little bit about your vocal range. You just demonstrated in that, one reason I wanted to play it was these very low mezzo-soprano or maybe even tenor baritone sounds, as well as a high soprano. Was your voice naturally that way? Have you had to work at that?
I think, you know, yes, I've worked at it would be the short answer. But I think that it's definitely now, after studying and voice for some time, and you know, it's a muscle, really. So then you end up being able to reach certain parts of the of your voice that I probably wouldn't have had I not trained at all. But yeah, so that it is my natural range, and you know, it is my natural range. But it, I did study at some point.
Tell us about your vocal training, your vocal education.
Well, you know, I kind of came to music at a later point in my life. I mean, came to it seriously. Being in New York City, I meet artists all the time who, you know, have since they were a child just been pursuing a career. And I didn't really go about it in that way. Music was always a part of my life. I studied the cello from the time I was 8 and throughout, you know, all the way into university. I was still studying and playing in the orchestra when I was in college. But I didn't really take my voice very seriously until after college, until after university, and when I kind of said, wait a minute, maybe I should, maybe this is an option. Because, you know, you grow up in, not that my family was so conservative, but coming from sort of a very straight and narrow sort of African background. And again, not that they're conservative at all, but just to say that they have, you know, certain types of careers. Most of my family are academics or work in medicine or work in sort of these typical professions. And I didn't have anybody who was in the arts. So I didn't know that I could pursue singing as a viable career. And when I did sing a lot as a child, I was in choirs and things like that, but I didn't really, I guess the backstory is, and I'm sorry if I'm not getting right to the question, because I think I'm trying to contextualize how I sort of came to understanding my voice.
Sure.
Around 8 years old, we moved from Zambia to Illinois. And when I was in Zambia, I was very much a performer between the age of 3 and 8. And I was always, you know, doing solos and singing and school plays and, you know, just really hungry for the stage. And when I moved to Illinois, sadly, you know, most people didn't really understand where I was from. At the time, I had a very strong British accent from the primary school I'd attended in Zambia. And people weren't sort of, it didn't make me feel so comfortable. And as a young child at 8 years old, you're sort of like, you know, you need the confidence to get up and speak, you know, and share with people. And when people would sort of say very ignorant comments about Africa and where I was from, I just tried to sort of shy away. I was always still an extroverted person, but not in a public setting. For some reason, I was completely silenced when it came to public speaking. Well, for several reasons, but I just sort of shied away from that. And I believe that that's actually why I began to pursue the cello, because I think in some way I still knew that I wanted music in my life. And so when music, you know, when strings were brought into the Champaign Unit 4 schools and they said, hey, would anybody like to play one of these instruments? I was like, this is fantastic. And I actually believe that the cello was my voice for so long. And I only sang in ensembles from that point forth. And it wasn't until, and singing was just a fantasy of mine. I don't know if anybody, at least in the Illinois or Champaign-Urbana listeners, might know of an opera singer named Amy Elizabeth Treat, who's also here in New York City. And she and I grew up together and would explore music and singing, you know, regularly. And I think it's just a beautiful thing that we would both sort of find ourselves now in New York and now sharing our voice, and only because I believe that she's somebody who knew me as a singer at a very young point. And it was a very private thing. That's why I'm bringing up the story of Amy. And so it wasn't until after college, after I went and spent a year and a half in East Africa and was able to sort of lay to rest a lot of the romantic baggage of who am I as an African woman. And I was so preoccupied with that. And I just being able to come to terms with my bicultural identity, being able to say, okay, now I've seen where I'm from, and now I actually, it sounds cliche, but now I know kind of where I would like to go. And I realized that was towards the music. And I came back to the States and moved to New York and began to take private lessons. And I had my first performance in New York 2 years after I moved here. So it sort of took me a while to feel confident about sharing anything at all, and also to feel like I was prepared in a way. So I've studied with people who have a very holistic approach to voice, who are very much about centering yourself and kind of coming from a yogic kind of understanding of your body as an instrument of vibrations. And so I've gone into that, and I've also studied classically as well, because that was sort of an easier transition from studying the cello and going to a classical voice instructor. And so understanding from different perspectives, but ultimately trying to make sure that it's your own voice. And that's sort of the journey of you know, from sound to silence to really acknowledging and fully embracing my voice as a performer and an artist.
Thanks for sharing that that personal history. Now, your years in Zambia as a very young child, and then the year and a half you spent later in East Africa, but you were actually born in the U.S., so you could become president. Is that true?
Yes.
And do you have the long form birth certificate, or could you get it?
I hope so.
We're talking with Somi about her music, and she has been described as in the Boston Globe as having an almost impossibly perfect cosmopolitanism. And in her background and in her music, we just heard a song that she sang in Swahili, and I'd like Somi just to play another cut from that album, Red Soil in My Eyes, from 2007, called African Lady. That tell us about the anti-domestic violence movement, and that this is sort of an anthem for.
Sure. Well, I wrote that song. You know, Lady is really, it's referencing the great Fela Kuti, the Nigerian pioneer of Afrobeat music, his song Lady, which was sort of talking about who African women are and can be. And it's burdened with stereotypes. His song is like, you know, just sort of all of the negative things about, I believe it's about a misunderstanding of the African woman. It's a great song. I mean, Fela Kuti was a genius, but the message can be perceived as, you know, a bit the condescending or a bit disrespectful of whom I believe African women to be. And the African women in my life have always been incredibly strong and big-hearted human beings, my mother in particular. I think that song initially was just about reinterpreting that particular piece, but I decided to let it be a reclamation of power, you know, and let it, if I was going to try to rearrange that let me write lyrics that sort of reclaim that. And I thought about a conversation I had with an auntie of mine, an aunt of mine in Uganda several years ago. And there was a woman that we knew who was going through a whole dispute with her husband, and just issues of women's rights came up in a conversation. And she told me that in Uganda at the time, and I'm not saying this is the case now, but at the time, it was considered legal to beat your wife, to abuse your wife in every possible way, because technically in the legal system, women were property of their husband. And they were, in that law, the men were able to do what they wanted and how they wanted, whatever they wanted and however they would like to treat their wives was acceptable. And so I was so disturbed at the fact that a woman had no recourse, no legal recourse, no protection of her physical self and, you know, through the country and the law. And so I wrote this song really thinking about, you know, speaking out against domestic violence. It happens in Africa, but everywhere in the world. I like to tell people that it's not to say that it happens in such a, you know, on such a gross level in Africa in a way that doesn't happen right here in the States. I mean,
I'm going to have to cut in so we can hear at least a minute or two of this
before
we come to the end of our hour. Just a second.
Sure.
Here's the African Lady by Somi from Red Soil in My Eyes.
She gon' say, she gon' say, I be lady, oh. She gon' say, she gon' say, I be lady, oh. Zigga, 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 zigga.
We've heard just the first minute or so from African Lady, but we got a little bit of the text written by Somi and performed by Somi, S-O-M-I. We only have about 90 seconds left, and we can talk, Somi, but tell us about your mother.
My mother is an angel. My mother is my best friend, and I'm thankful for her.
She's listening. You described her as strong and big-hearted. She's been a nurse in a cancer unit, right?
Yes. She is now retired, but she was an oncology nurse. And she was, before that, she was a midwife and worked in obstetrics, but then she transitioned to cancer. She's a wonderful human being. And I'm not saying that because she's my mother. I'm saying that because I know it's true.
And tell us her name.
Her name is Elizabeth Kakoma.
K-A-K-O-M-A. And Laura Kakoma, growing up in Champaign-Urbana, went to Centennial High School. Where'd you go to college?
I went to Central, actually. I went to Uni and
Central.
Oh,
you
Central
went to Central.
High.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it wrong. Sorry. You went to Central High School and then where to college?
I did my undergraduate at the University of Illinois in Champaign, and I did my graduate work at New York University, Tisch School of the Arts.
We appreciate very much your taking time to be on the phone with us today, and I'm sorry we had a few technical difficulties, but your voice sounded great live as well as on the CDs where we were able to share with our
Thanks
listeners.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. This is Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith, and we've been listening to an archive program with an interview with the singer and songwriter Somi, S-O-M-I, because we were unable, unfortunately, on this live program today, February 19, to talk with our hoped-for guest, Jay Michelson, the author of God versus Gay? The Religious Case for Equality. We will see if we can find another time to talk with him. But for people in the local Champaign-Urbana area, you have a chance to hear him speak live tomorrow. That's Monday the 20th at 7 p.m. at the Hillel Foundation at the University of Illinois campus. That is on the corner of 5th and John Street, and it's the Cohen Center for Jewish Student Life. J. Michelson was raised as a Orthodox Jew and discovered that as he was maturing that he was gay. And this book talks about his not only his own personal experience, but he's also investigated his religion. He has a degree in religion in addition to a law degree. And his book talks about politics and Christian texts as well as Jewish texts that many people think deal with the issue of homosexuality. So it's a fascinating book, and I encourage people to read it and to hear him speak at Hillel on the 20th, February 20th, 2012, tomorrow at Hillel Foundation on campus. Coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead, next week we'll be talking with the director of the Wade Center in Wheaton, Illinois, about the C.S. Lewis materials that are collected there. The director there is Christopher Mitchell, and we'll be talking with him February 26. Let me mention also some of the programs coming up in April, particularly the archive program we're playing on April 27th, right before Roger Ebert. Film Festival is here at the Virginia Theater in Champaign, Illinois. And on the 27th, that's the Sunday before the Film Festival, we're playing an archive program of an interview that Roger gave us back in 1999 that's recently been unearthed here at WILL Radio. And it was really a treasure to find because, of course, Roger, because of cancer in the throat, has lost his ability to speak over the last 3 or 4 years. So we'll be able to hear this program where he was talking about religious themes in movies. So that's something we can hear on April 27th. We'll be playing that archive program then. So that will be a treat. And I mentioned earlier, Roger Ebert has been in the news lately because the Daily Illini, the DI, the student newspaper here, which is free to students, has been having trouble, like many newspapers, selling enough ads to pay their bills. And so Roger has started helping out with a fundraising project for the Daily Illini. He's an alum, of course, of the university and was a former editor of the Daily Illini before he went to be the movie critic at the Sun-Times. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs, and I apologize for those who were looking forward to hear J. Michelson live today, but these things happen. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Jarman Center, Tuscola; Natural Gourmet, Champaign; Fertilizer Dealer Supply, Philo; and Strategic Farm Marketing, Champaign. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.